Good afternoon. You're listening to KFSK News for Wednesday, September 2nd. I'm Olivia Rose. A handful of Petersburg high schoolers are trying out a new course this semester, an emergency trauma technician certification class. KFSK's Taylor Heckert sat down with Petersburg Emergency Services Coordinator Ryan Gilkey, who is helping teach the course. Gilkey says that it's a class that requires less hours than an EMT certification, and it's built with communities like Petersburg in mind.
So the ETT, the Emergency Trauma Technician, was created in Southeast Alaska very specifically for some of these communities like ours that we might have a lot of resources available to us, but at the same time, any sort of real incident has to leave by plane, right? There's just a ruralness or a remoteness to where we are. And so they have designed the course so the minimum age is 14 to get certified as an emergency trauma technician in the state of Alaska, and the, you know, there's no maximum age. But in the course right now, we have age ranges 14 through 18. We have five students, and we have the full gamut, and they'll all get certified, and it'll be great.
Nice. So what, is this a semester or a full year class?
Yeah, this is another good thing about the way this ETT thing is set up. So it's one semester long. And give or take, every semester has like 65 hours of classroom work. For the state, the ETT requires 40 hours of classroom work just at minimum, right? Anything extra is great. And so we'll obviously have time for review and to help solidify it, and it's all great. But long term as well, an EMT course in and of itself requires a minimum of 140 hours. So you just can't fit it into a semester. You could fit it over two semesters, and that'd be fine. But the way that this ETT program set up is that you can bridge to an EMT, and that bridge to an EMT is like another 60 hours, another 70 hours, I think. So it's just a little more than maybe a coursework. But it would allow us to offer ETT one semester. Next semester, if there's enough interest, we'll just do the bridge program, and we could kind of have that as a revolving door as students over the years show interest and have different levels of certifications. We can offer different, you know, next steps, especially for the older students, because I think to be an EMT, you know, there's a minimum age.
What are you guys going to be looking at this semester? What are the kids going to be learning?
At the highest level, you're going to learn how to keep someone alive. That's kind of the goal, right? And then obviously we're learning how to call for help in remote areas and learn what type of help you need. But in all the ways that it matters, learning how to keep someone alive and stable as best as possible until they can get to further care.
So conceivably, could these kids graduate this class and then decide they want to volunteer with the fire department?
Yes, that's the plan, especially for, like, no debate, the ones that are 18. It was like, if you guys wanted to, obviously I would make sure to check with your parents, you know, just because you're in high school, but you could start jumping on the ambulance. We just went over the ambulance. I parked it in front of the high school today. We took them into the back and gave them an intro to it. Like, that was, you know, you're going to learn lots of stuff, but the goal is by the end of this course, you can jump on the ambulance and add value right off the bat.
Wow.
You could do that here. You could do that at any other town you move to.
Wow. I mean, that's a pretty impressive thing to be able to do by the end of a semester.
That's the hope. Yeah, it'd be very cool. And that's what the ETT was created for. And so hopefully we can take advantage of it and, yeah, get them there.
Nice. What are you most excited about for this course?
A couple things. I always thought to myself, like, if you really want people to be interested in something, you have to start when they're young because you have to help them understand why this matters. That's what I'm excited about. I mean, weaving in like history of Alaska, the amount of plane crashes we've had here, boat incidents just this summer, unfortunately. There's been a lot of incidents out in the fishing boats. But, you know, this is the things that these people will get up to.
I always hear we need more volunteers. We need more volunteers for EMS, for everyone here. Do you think this class can help address that need?
For what it's worth, I guess maybe this is a good point to make very clear. This has nothing to do with getting volunteers, in my mind. I mean, if nothing else, they're very young. And, you know, I don't know if their families would be comfortable with it and whatever, right? There's plenty of conversations we had there. If they would like to, wonderful, right? And we'll certainly try to prepare them for that. But this is about them. You know, if nothing else, let's pretend some kid wants to get off the island and never come back. I've applied to college. I've been to college. If I was reading an application and I saw some kid was actively or he was certified, forget about volunteering. If he was certified in emergency medicine, maybe an EMT by the end of this year, right? Some of these kids could be. He'll be able to step into any town in America and add value right away if he wanted to. And that's like, I don't know. When I was 18, I don't think I could say that. So I think it'd be very cool and would help them if they want to leave and wherever they end up being.
That was EMS coordinator Ryan Gilkey speaking with KFSK's Taylor Hecker about the new emergency trauma technician course at Petersburg's High School. Gilkey says he's interested in offering emergency trauma technician courses and EMT bridge courses to the broader community, but he needs community interest first. If you're interested, you can contact him by emailing rgilkey@petersburgak.gov. Two environmental conservation groups and a Southeast Alaska tribe have filed suit against the U.S. Forest Service, challenging a logging project just east of Ketchikan. The Forest Service announced in July that it would move forward with the South Revilla Integrated Resource Project, a plan that includes harvesting over 5,000 acres of trees, mostly old growth, in the Tongass National Forest. It also includes construction of new trails, cabins, boat launches, and roads. The suit, filed in U.S. District Court last week by the Ketchikan Indian Community, the Southeast Alaska Conservation Council, and the Center for Biological Diversity, alleges the project violates federal law because the Forest Service failed to rationally balance the Tongass's multiple uses. The complaint alleges that the project's logging of old-growth trees will harm subsistence and recreation resources. It also highlights potential impacts to wildlife, the ecosystem, and the economy. The suit lists several defendants, including the Forest Service and the U.S. Department of Agriculture. It also lists Region 10 Acting Regional Forester Jeremiah Ingersoll and the Acting Forest Service Supervisor for the Tongass, Janelle Crocker. The Forest Service cannot immediately be reached for comment. The South Revilla plans were first introduced in 2018, but were paused in 2020. Last year, the Trump administration issued an executive order to expand timber production. Following an environmental review, the Forest Service decided that work on the South Revilla project can begin immediately. Juneau City leaders posed some major questions about glacial outburst flood funding, including possible flood taxes, at an assembly committee on Monday night. But they don't have answers yet. KTOO's Alex Solomon reports.
At a Juneau Assembly Committee meeting, City Manager Katie Kester said a long-term flood solution sponsored by the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers will require the city to cough up a portion of the funding.
I think we have a much stronger argument when we go and say we need a big chunk of money for this project, Congress, if we have both our own bond for match in place and we have participation, you know, by our partners in different layers of government.
According to a memo Kester wrote to the Assembly, the federal government typically requires local funders to cover a quarter of the cost for permanent flood control projects. But Kester says the city is working with Alaska's congressional delegation to amend a bill called the Water Resources Development Act that could drop it down to a 10% match instead. Assemblymember Greg Smith says it will probably be a lot of money either way.
If it's a $400 million project and a 10% match, that means we need to come up with $40 million. And if it's a 25% match, we'd need to be coming up with $100 million.
Kester says the Army Corps will propose a solution and a cost estimate in December, and the Assembly should decide how to pay its portion by then. She said the Assembly could ask Juneau as a whole to pay for it, or just those in the flood zone, using property taxes. Kester says if voters approve a municipal ballot proposition to raise Juneau's property tax rates in the election this fall, it would give the city more flexibility to do that. But that wouldn't cover maintenance costs for the current temporary solution. The temporary flood wall made of HESCO barriers lines most of Juneau's Mendenhall River, and it needs annual upkeep to protect valley neighborhoods until a long-term solution comes online. Kester says the Assembly might want to consider a special service area to pay for it. That would require a majority of registered voters within service area boundaries to agree.
How big is that service area? That's another question that this body needs to weigh in on.
In June, the Assembly voted to undo a controversial funding plan that required some homeowners protected by the flood wall to help pay for it, but not all. Kester says the flood wall protected more than 1,300 homes during the flood last month, but that number isn't static. Last year, the flood wall covered fewer neighborhoods. The city has spent more than $20 million on the flood wall over the past 2 years. Kester estimates Juneau taxpayers covered about half of that, and the other half came from grants and loans from the state and Tlingit and Haida. After the flood in August, the city estimates the HESCO barriers will need millions more in repairs. It's unclear when the assembly will vote on these funding questions. In Juneau, I'm Alex Solomon.
A new nonprofit called PayNeoc launched last week to connect connect youth in rural Alaska with careers in aviation. The kickoff event, held in Anchorage, brought together about 100 people, including aviation leaders and Senator Lisa Murkowski. Ilona Naden with the Alaska Desk has a story.
Anchorage's Merrill Field was buzzing as about 100 people gathered to celebrate the launch of a new aviation nonprofit. The crowd included several young students, like Jordan Lewis. Lewis works as a ramper for Grant Aviation and is from the village of Chifornik in southwestern Alaska. He is only 22 years old, but he's already earned a private pilot license and over 250 hours of flight time. And he dreams even bigger.
I want to fly for the big airlines one day, but my small goal is to fly for like the rural villages first.
Lewis says he became interested in aviation because his grandfather was a village airline agent, and he'd follow him to meet the planes. He says the field is crucial in Alaska.
There's like hundreds and hundreds of villages that aren't on the road system, and I believe if it wasn't for aviation, most of those villages wouldn't continue to exist.
Lewis was one of the students who took aviation classes through a career training organization called Alaska Excel. The classes have been offered for about 8 years through different local organizations. But program leaders say the new nonprofit called PayNeoc will help them get funding more reliably and make classes more sustainable. Students can enroll in piloting, aviation maintenance, and ground handling courses, as well as get mentorship and career opportunities through PayNeoc. The program might offer a dispatcher course soon, too. Jamie Clays is the founder and chair of PayNeoc.
It is very important for us to put rural kids in these positions because they do understand the terrain and the weather, and they have an invested interest in the community and the people they're flying.
Clays is originally from Bettles in interior Alaska and says she understood early on that rural Alaskans depend on aviation, but it's hard for them to get jobs in the industry. That's why Clays decided to teach her first aviation course through Alaska Excel 8 years ago. Since then, instructors have worked with Alaska organizations and school districts to help connect students to aviation classes and, in some cases, to travel to Anchorage to attend them. Clays says up to 200 students enrolled at the height of the program. But 2 years ago, Clays says some partnering organizations lost federal funding and had to cut their support for the program. Enrollment went down too.
I didn't ever want to see this program stop, and so I needed to do something that was going to help it grow.
Clays named the new nonprofit PayNeoc in honor of Ellen PayNeoc, the first Alaska Native woman to become a licensed pilot. PayNeoc died in 2008, but her family flew from across the state and country to celebrate the nonprofit's launch. Lotsi Jones is PayNeoc's aunt from Utqaqaviq.
I'm glad that she's recognized, you know, because it took a lot for her to pursue her dream.
Senator Lisa Murkowski also attended the event and said that PayNeoc was not only a pilot, but also an ivory carver, a writer, and a mentor who
was willing to pay that forward to help so many others, and particularly young Native kids from the villages, those who needed to be encouraged.
Murkowski commended the program leaders for their work to meet the needs of Alaska's growing aviation sector. Joel Kamikov is a 17-year-old from Kotlik who dreams to become a pilot too.
I dream working in medevac because I get to help people and that makes me feel good. And also, like, being in the plane and in the air clears my mind.
For a start, Kamikov took a ground handling class through the program last spring to learn how to fuel and load an airplane. In Anchorage, I am Alena Naiden.
For KFSK, I'm Olivia Rose.